Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Habeas Filing Deadline Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Tuesday, January 13th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Jimenez v. Quarterman. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act's one-year limitations period for filing a federal habeas petition begins again upon the expiration of time for seeking review of an out-of-time appeal granted by a state court. In a unanimous decision, the court held that a criminal defendant's judgment is not final for the purposes of the AEDPA until the conclusion of the out-of-time direct appeal or the expiration of time for seeking review of that appeal, and therefore remanded petitioner Carlos Jimenez's request for a certificate of appealability to the Fifth Circuit for further proceedings. To discuss the decision, we welcome former Wisconsin Circuit Court judge and Gast Weber Mullins partner Michael Brennan. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Judge Brennan.
Hello, this is Mike Brennan with a post-argument, post-decision podcast on the case of Jimenez versus Quarterman. This is a case for all of you procedural mavens out there. Just when does the statute of limitations begin to run on a claim for habeas corpus? Can the clock stop running on such a claim? If so, how? The Supreme Court of the United States addressed these questions, perhaps in a more narrow, fact-bound way, in this case of Jimenez versus Quarterman. This is another decision involving the AEDPA statute of limitations. The AEDPA, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, which is at Title 22, United States Code, Section 2244D1A, is, of course, the 1996 statute which altered the habeas landscape in so many ways. The AEDPA limitation statute generally requires that a federal habeas corpus claim be filed within 1 year of the completion of, quote, direct review, end quote, of the state court conviction of the time for seeking such review. At issue in this case is the meaning of the phrase, quote, direct review, end quote. Should an appeal that has been reinstated by court order well after the ineffectiveness of a prisoner's prior appellate counsel caused a default in the original appeal be considered part of the prisoner's direct review? Some background facts. In 1995, a judge in Texas sentenced Carlos Jimenez to 43 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to burglary and violated the terms of his probation for a prior felony conviction. On appeal, his appointed appellate counsel filed an Anders brief, concluding that Jimenez had no grounds for appeal and seeking to withdraw from the representation. That attorney also drafted a letter to his client in which he told Jimenez that he had the right to file a pro se brief as the Anders case requires that appellate counsel to do. This letter from the appointed appellate counsel to Mr. Jimenez was sent to Mr. Jimenez at the Tom Green County Jail in Texas. But Mr. Jimenez had been transferred months earlier, it turns out, to the Texas State Prison in Abilene. Jimenez never received a copy of the Anders brief, nor did he receive the letter. On September 11, 1996, Mr. Jimenez's appeal was dismissed, and his state appellate counsel was allowed to withdraw. Again, Mr. Jimenez did not receive the court's decision because he was in Abilene rather than the jail. Accordingly, Mr. Jimenez was not aware that he had 1 month until October 11th of 1996 to seek further review from the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, which is the highest criminal court in that state. Mr. Jimenez wrote several letters to the Texas Court of Appeals and his appointed attorney and eventually found out that his state appeal had been dismissed. This occurred in September 1997. By this time, the deadline for appeal to the state's highest criminal court had long passed. Normally, this would conclude direct review of Mr. Jimenez's case, and the clock would start running for a federal habeas petition. In April 2002, Jimenez sought collateral relief from the denial of his right to an appeal in the Texas state courts. He did so by petitioning for a writ of state habeas corpus. after determining that Mr. Jimenez's right to effective assistance of counsel and his right to a direct appeal had been denied in 2002, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals reinstated his original direct appeal. This was a victory for Mr. Jimenez, who got a new lawyer. Jimenez pursued his reinstated direct appeal, but he was not successful. Then he pursued post-conviction relief in the Texas state courts, but that was also denied. At this point, Mr. Jimenez had exhausted state habeas review of his conviction. State proceedings concluded in June 2005. Mr. Jimenez, ever persistent, turned next to the federal court system, where he filed his federal habeas petition less than 1 month later. In federal court, the question arose whether the AEDPA, 1 year statute of limitations, had begun to run when A, Mr. Jimenez failed to seek further review of the dismissal of his original appeal, that is, with the expiration of the time for seeking review, or B, if the reinstated appeal effectively restarted the federal appeals clock, such that his 1 year began to run at the end of the reinstated appeal process, that is, with the conclusion of direct review. Mr. Jimenez filed a habeas corpus petition with the federal district court within 1 year, taking into account statutory tolling of the completion of his reinstated appeal. But the federal district court, relying on Fifth Circuit precedent, held that Mr. Jimenez's federal habeas claim was barred by the 1 year statute of limitations of 28 U.S.C. 2241 D1A. The district court reasoned that the limitations period began running at the conclusion of Mr. Jimenez's original failed appeal, rather than the conclusion of his reinstated appeal. The Fifth Circuit eventually concluded that even though the reinstated appeal functioned no differently than any other direct appeal, the federal statute of limitations did not contemplate a limitations period that starts and then stops and then starts again. The federal appeals court thus held that Mr. Jimenez's claim was time barred. So Mr. Jimenez's petition for a certificate of appealability, required under the AEDPA, was denied by both the district court and the Fifth Circuit. Mr. Jimenez kept going. He filed a pro se cert petition. In asking the Supreme Court of the United States to take his case, Mr. Jimenez pointed to a split between the circuit courts of appeals on the issue. In its brief in opposition to cert, Texas downplayed any conflict between the federal appeals courts. In a rare occurrence, the court granted Mr. Jimenez's pro se cert petition, and Mr. Jimenez took on appellate counsel for the Supreme Court litigation of his case. So when is it that Mr. Jimenez's state judgment became, quote, final by the conclusion of direct review, end quote? Was it when the first direct review process ended in 1996, or was it when the second direct review process ended in 2005? It should be obvious that defendants usually do not get two chances at direct review, much less two chances separated by a number of years. Accordingly, it's not surprising that there is no direct precedent resolving this somewhat unique issue. On November 4th of 2008, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case. Mr. Jimenez offered a plain language argument based on the federal limitations provision. He contended that his claim is timely because it was filed within 1 year after the conclusion of his reinstated appeal. He says that appeal was in effect the same as any other direct appeal. He gave examples of how courts restart the time for starting an appeal all the time. For example, when they grant a retroactive extension of time to file a notice of appeal, or when they grant an out-of-time petition for rehearing en banc. Mr. Jimenez argued that the Fifth Circuit's decision would lead to anomalies that Congress would not have intended. Parenthetically, how could any statute writer anticipate these facts? Mr. Jimenez argued that, for example, even if he had quickly discovered the dismissal of his direct appeal, the federal limitations period would run out before he could get his appeal reinstated and then decided. In that example, he would have to file his federal habeas petition while his reinstated direct appeal was still pending in state court. The state of Texas responded that this was not the case and pointed to other provisions of the federal limitations statute that it argued would allow a defendant in those circumstances to delay the onset of the federal limitations period. The state pointed to Section 2244D1B, which runs the limitations period from, quote, the date on which the impediment to filing an application created by state action in violation of the Constitution or U.S. laws is removed, end quote. The state also pointed to Section 2244D1D, which runs the period from, quote, the date on which the factual predicate of the claim could have been discovered through the exercise of due diligence, end quote. Texas argued that either of these two provisions could be used to address the unusual circumstances of this case without running the risk that a defendant could, as did Mr. Jimenez, wait a substantial amount of time, years in fact, after finding out about his counsel's failure before going to state court to seek relief. Texas also argues that Congress did not understand the term, quote, direct review, end quote, of the limitation statute to include a reinstated direct appeal, like in this case. Texas offered the following reasoning. Congress expected that once the time for seeking further direct review had passed, at bar, that would be when Mr. Jimenez did not seek discretionary review of the dismissal of his appeal from the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, that the judgment would be considered final and the defendant would have his 1 year to seek federal habeas review, with, of course, any time told while he exhausted the state habeas route. Texas argued that it would be anomalous to read the statute to consider a criminal judgment final for a certain period of time, but then have it rendered suddenly non-final by later events. In his reply, Mr. Jimenez argued that the state's proposed alternative remedies, 2241D1B and D, by their terms, cannot apply here. When Jimenez's appellate counsel failed to notify him of the Anders brief or the dismissal of his appeal, that did not prevent Mr. Jimenez from filing a federal habeas petition. Anyway, a court-appointed lawyer's failure would not be considered state action in this context. Mr. Jimenez also argued in reply that the state's concern about defendants waiting too long after the dismissal of their first direct appeal is addressed by state time limits for seeking reinstatement of direct appeals. Mr. Jimenez noted that Texas applies the doctrine of latches to ensure the timeliness of such requests, and in this case, the state did not attempt to invoke that defense when Jimenez sought reinstatement of his appeal. At pages 50 to 51 of the oral argument transcript, Justice John Paul Stevens asked, quote, isn't this characteristic of this category of cases that really most of them are pretty frivolous, end quote? The justice goes on, quote, what strikes me about the case is we are fighting about the limitations and whether it applies and so forth. You probably could have disposed of the whole litigation a lot faster by just looking at the merits for about 10 minutes, end quote. The good justice may have it right. There are times in the thicket that is habeas litigation when reaching the merits is the most efficient or expeditious resolution. For example, Congress recognized that, for exhaustion, in Title 28 U.S. Code Section 2254B2. The same argument has been offered as to Title 28 U.S. Code Section 2254D. The question presented in the case is phrased in hyper-technical terms. Quote, whether a certificate of appealability should have issued pursuant to Slack versus McDaniel, 529 U.S. 473 at 482, a 2000 case, on the question of whether, pursuant to 28 U.S.C. Section 2244D1A, when, through no fault of the petitioner, he was unable to obtain a direct review, and the highest state court granted relief to place him back to his original position on direct review. Should the one-year limitations begin to run after he has completed that direct review, resetting the one-year limitations period? recharacterizing the question presented in somewhat more direct terms would be as follows. What triggers the one-year statute of limitations for federal habeas claims? At issue is the meaning of direct review. Should an appeal that has been reinstated by a court order, well after the ineffectiveness of a prisoner's prior appellate counsel caused a default in the original appeal, be considered part of the prisoner's direct review? Or recharacterized, did the federal habeas limitation clock start over with a new direct appeal, or was it just tolled while that proceeding was pending? On January 13th of 2009, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Jimenez versus Quarterman. The High Court's opinion was unanimous, and the decision was written by Justice Thomas, who characterized the court's holding as a narrow one. The Supreme Court overturned the Fifth Circuit's decision, holding, "We hold that where a state court grants a criminal defendant the right to file an out-of-time direct appeal during state collateral review, but before the defendant has first sought federal habeas relief, his judgment is not yet final for purposes of Section 2244D1A. How did the court get to this holding? Justice Thomas began the opinion, one of statutory interpretation, with the plain language of the statute. The parties agreed on 28 U.S. Code Section 2244D1A as the controlling statute. Justice Thomas noted the disputed question and then relied on the plain meaning of the statute to find for Mr. Jimenez. The court found finality of a state court judgment expressly defined by statute as the conclusion of direct review or the expiration of the time seeking such review. The court looked to an analogous statute, Section 2255, and its interpretation that direct review cannot conclude for purposes of the statute until the availability of direct appeal to the state courts and to this court has been exhausted. Until that time, the process of direct review has not come to an end, and a presumption of finality and legality cannot yet have attached to the conviction and to the sentence. Therefore, the court concluded, under the statutory definition, once the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals reopened direct review of petitioner's conviction, it was no longer final for purposes of the statute. Instead, the order granting an out-of-time appeal restored the pendency of the direct appeal. Thus, petitioner's conviction was again capable of modification through direct appeal to the state courts and to the Supreme Court on cert review. From this decision, it becomes a matter of arithmetic. Mr. Jimenez's conviction did not become final until January 6th of 2004, when the time for seeking cert review to the Supreme Court of the United States had ended. Texas had argued that the Supreme Court previously acknowledged Congress's intent to advance the finality of criminal convictions with a tight timeline of 1 year. Texas reasoned that permitting a state court to reopen direct review and thus to reset the AEDPA 1 year statute of limitations would undermine the policy of finality that Congress had established in the statutory scheme. But Justice Thomas returned to the plain language argument and thus to make use of the date on which the entirety of the state direct appellate review process was completed. The decision put the court, at least obliquely, into the debate of comity versus finality. Comity is the notion that state courts are entitled to the opportunity to correct their own constitutional violations before the federal courts step in and overturn them. Under this principle, state court remedies must be exhausted before federal habeas relief can be granted. Mr. Jimenez emphasized that comity, finality, and federalism would all be furthered by interpreting reinstated appeals as part of direct review. He argued that if reinstated appeals are not considered part of direct review, and instead the federal one-year statute of limitations begins to run as soon as the defendant first loses his right of appeal, the 1 year may expire before the state review is even exhausted. This would force defendants to file habeas petitions too early, giving federal courts the chance to upset state convictions before the states are able to correct the constitutional violations themselves, or make federal review not possible because federal courts in habeas cases are required to defer to state proceedings for factual findings. Texas pointed out the need to balance comity with the important aim of securing finality. Texas especially believed that it was because of Jimenez's own unnecessary delay that his opportunity to seek federal habeas review had been foreclosed. Even after learning that his state appeal was dismissed, Mr. Jimenez waited 4.5 years to seek relief. At least in this case, the court has come down firmly on the side of comity, deferring to Texas's reinstatement of Mr. Jimenez's direct appeal and calculating the appropriate time for review from that point forward. Generally, courts say they are trying to interpret statutes consistently with the legislature's intent. How is that done in a strange fact circumstance that could have only come into a law professor's mind at exam time? Even more so, why did the Supreme Court grant cert on a case like this, which is unlikely to be repeated? Is this a case about misdelivered mail? The court's unanimous reliance on the plain meaning argument indicates that notwithstanding these very quirky fact circumstances, it will step in and reverse a federal appellate court resolution which is contrary to the plain meaning of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.